Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
When I'm preparing for the show, the old Frank Sinatra song, Love and Marriage, runs through my head. Now, I'm going to date myself here, and you may not know the song, but it goes, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. And that might be a bit old-fashioned, and, you know, some people actually think marriage is a bit old-fashioned. And what maybe I should have in mind is the line, everyone loves a lover. Real love, unconditional love, soulmate love seems to be the quest that we're all on. But is this the kind of love that really exists? Is it something that exists? And if it is, how do we know if we found it? And honestly, the challenge may be that we are looking in the wrong place. So to explain a little bit more, I'm joined by Kara Post Kennedy. She's an editor and columnist for the Good Men Project, and she also blogs at Your New Best Friend and the Huffington Post. So, Kara, thank you so much for coming on and talking about what everybody is talking about, which is finding the one, soulmate, all of that stuff.
Yeah, it's, you know, if you haven't found the one, then you're looking. And it's a human condition to want to make that connection and to want to find that person that you feel understands you implicitly and that you yourself implicitly understand.
Right. And you wrote a recent piece called Are You Still Looking for the One? And you do. You take on this quest. But you kind of start from an interesting historical perspective because – and I know this, and many people do, but a lot of people don't, that marriage didn't start out to be about romantic love. So what was the purpose of marriage, and how did love, and more specifically the idea of the one, the soulmate, get brought into it?
Well, this is one of these things. We have a very cultural kind of, I'm going to call it brainwashing about that happens really much more for women than for men. You know, little boys don't play groom. You know, little boys
don't
dress up.
Well, that's true. They don't sit there and write, you know, so-and-so plus so-and-so in a heart forever. You know, when you're in fourth and fifth grade or whatever it is when girls start doing this stuff.
Exactly. We do have a tremendous cultural brainwashing when it comes to marriage. But, you know, and I don't like to lecture, and I try to lay in links in my, you know, articles, but not overdo it because, you know, presumably people know how to Google, and if this interests them, they can get information. But marriage was, marriage is a patriarchal structure, but it was, you know, initially, if you look back even to primitive societies where we talk about the hunter-gatherer, you know, this was a situation where women were needed for childbearing. Sure, we were. We still are.
can't get those little babies into the world without us.
That's exactly right. The human society will die off unless we bear children. So when we bear children and when we have this tiny, vulnerable person, you know, nursing and in our care, we weren't so able in primitive societies to be then also, you know, building the fires and killing the, you know. So it was a practical arrangement. It was a very practical arrangement. If we wanted our culture to continue, you know, women needed the protection of men. Uh-huh. And when we got into more the farming, this is when we started, you know, growing our own food and being able to store and save it. This was a big game changer for marriage because now men could become rich. It wasn't just kill and eat. You know, we could now we have property. Now we could, you know, now there could be a little competition, you know. And at that point, you know, women were, you know, seen as a liability. You know, we weren't seen as like the great, you know, farm hands. You know, you wanted you wanted to get a woman who could bear you lots of sons. Your daughter was a liability because you were going to need to give away some of your property to sell her off. It's very interesting. I mean, women were valued for their father's wealth and for their fertility. And that was the function, you know, of women in society for a really long time. And again, it was seen as a cultural and societal boon, marriage was, because it was a way for powerful families to align with each other. and to, you know, support each other's amassing of fortune. You know, the rich get richer, the expression goes. So it became this very powerful institution that was promoted by government and by the church. Mm-hmm. But it was not
It was not romantic.
It was not romantic. And it was certainly not something to empower women.
Right.
You know,
well, 'cause we were property, basically.
Basically. So quite the opposite. And I think Geoffrey Chaucer is the one who is sort of credited, and, you know, I'm sure that there, you know, there are so many facets, credited with promoting the idea of romantic love, you know, with creating the romantic love as an ideal.
Interesting.
And, you know, here we are now, you know. You look at the year.
Hundreds of years later, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we still have, you know, mostly, and again, there are people are, let's say, breaking the rules or changing the rules all over the place, but we still have the most hilariously sexist marriage ceremony where the bride wears white because she's pure.
And I'm not going to have a conversation with you about what my mother said when I was actually going to wear white at my wedding. So, okay.
You know, she is valued for her purity, and she wears white, and her father gives her away because she's property, and she takes on her husband's name, and her children take on her husband's name. She gives away her identity. It's hilarious that we're still doing this, you know, because basically, we talked about, okay, primitive cultures, the women needed protection because they could not be, you know, fending off the bear while, you know, nursing.
Right.
And then we talk about the farming industry coming in, and, you know, women are still needed for bearing children, but also now we have property that can be exchanged. Mm-hmm. Now we have, you know, men looking to improve their fortunes by their choice of a wife, not by the woman they love, by the father whose money they love. And then, you know, we move into now the industrial age where women are, now we don't need protection from bears.
Right, because, you know, we live in cities mostly.
Yeah, we don't need to be protected from bears. We mostly live in houses where we can lock the doors, and we can earn our own money, and we can, you know, farm, you know, buy our own food, and we can do all of this stuff. But a lot of this tradition has continued because it keeps the patriarchy sort of on, you know, solid ground. You know, I question all the time, and we've talked about this on the Stop Sexism. Why does our government sanction marriage? Why is the government involved in our personal relationships at all? You know, this is a religious institution, but we are rewarded financially in our country.
Well, there is some argument in whether or not marriage is the necessary thing, but there is some argument for the idea of marriage, families being, you know, kind of stabilizing society. Now, I mean, I think there's some evidence that supports that. But again, if you go into Europe where it's not necessarily marriage, it's basically long-term stable relationships.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's
absolutely
really what people are after.
That's what people are after. And, you know, so then in my article, I talked about the, you know, not necessarily just marriage per se, but monogamy.
Mm-hmm.
And why monogamy started, also not for romantic reasons. You know, we didn't start being primates didn't begin being monogamous because they were so enamored with their partner. You know, they became monogamous so that other male primates didn't come in and murder their children in order to mate with their wives, you know, with their partner.
Right, yeah, that's a really interesting point that you make in the article. But again, during all of this time, throughout history, we still have had the biological, emotional connection to a particular person, I don't know if we want to call it a soulmate or whatever, but you know, we may be married to somebody else, we may be partnered with somebody else, but we're still hot for, you know, I mean, you know, it's like, you know, Guinevere and Lancelot and, you know, in Camelot. I mean, you know, it's like, you still have these things. So is there really such a thing as a soulmate?
Well, I believe there is. So now I've given you, like, I've blinded you with science, and I've given
right.
you, this historical perspective. I believe there is. However, you know, in researching for this article, you know, one of the things that I found, you know, there is actually some scientific evidence, you know, that
sure.
soulmates are a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, you know, the big overriding and umbrella that you start this conversation with almost seems like the cherry on top, which is the more people believe in this the romantic concept of a soulmate, the less likely the relationship they have with their quote-unquote soulmate will survive. Because relationships are work. It doesn't matter
right.
if you are Romeo and Juliet, you know, and it's the most, you know, passionate, most connected, most amazing, you know, experience of your life. At the end of the day, you're still going to have to roll up your sleeves and get to work. That's, you know, people think that when you find your soulmate, oh, well, now
oh, yes.
it's like a movie. Everything
mm-hmm.
is solved. You know, and we lived happily ever after. No. Nope.
Well, yeah, and that's, you know, and I always want to say, you know, I have this kind of flip thing about, okay, well, let's go in and check on Cinderella and Prince Charming and, you know, and Belle and the Beast.
Know
you know,
each other.
Ten years later to find out, you know, how's it going? Does he throw his socks on the floor? You know,
oh, my God, they didn't even know each other. Like, they danced
you know?
Once, and they got married. Oh, God, that's so romantic. That sounds horrible.
Well, that's like, it, I mean, when I saw the show Into the Woods, where, you know, of course, it doesn't work out, and he says to her, well, you know, I'm Prince Charming, not Prince Loyal, and I just cracked up.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, no, he falls in love with somebody else, and, you know,
right.
he didn't, I mean, he and Cinderella didn't know each other when they got married. And, you know, I one of the things that was interesting in, again, researching this whole concept of a soulmate is, and this is something I've always believed, you know, as long as I've been, you know, in touch with the idea of soulmates. Like, soulmates aren't necessarily romantic relationships.
Interesting.
And that is, you know, you could have a child that's a soulmate of yours. You could have a parent that's a soulmate of yours. I think we all have friends that we
right.
consider to be soulmates of ours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, love at first sight is something that we experience with friends. We also experience revulsion at first sight.
Yes.
This is our intuition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is that energetic level where it's almost like, you know, we have like little hairs on our bodies, like the spiders that, you know, prickle up, you know,
mm-hmm.
towards certain people and towards certain. So, you know, it's a lot of pressure on one person to be your soulmate. I believe you've got lots of soulmates. You know, you will have relationships with a professor. You could have a relationship with a coworker. You could have a
mm-hmm.
relationship. These people aren't necessarily you know, one and only, forever true, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I have friends that I met, and you see them, something clicks.
Right.
You know, that first conversation, and you just know, like, this person is your, you know, bosom buddy. My dad, who has, you know, passed, was just that person who got me,
mm-hmm.
you know, when I was growing up, that I didn't need to explain myself to. Soulmates are relationships that we have where there's just some kind of an unspoken connection that is there from almost the minute that we see this other person. That does not mean that this person is going to be a romantic partner, and that does not mean, like we were saying, that this relationship will need no work and that everything will just seamlessly come together. You know, it's still going to be a relationship. And, you know, conversely, as we, you know, we mentioned, the person that gives you at first sight, that's a good instinct. That's a good instinct to pay attention to.
Well, I mean, and I love that you're talking about this because, for one, it basically says that there is not one singular person walking the planet who is our soulmate, which
absolutely
just
not.
By percentages makes it really small that we'll actually ever find them, considering
exactly.
how many people are on the Earth. But also that, you know, that so there's this idea that it can be – that a soulmate can be multiple different aspects, and we can find soulmates in all kinds of ways. And so, one, like you said, it takes the pressure off of one single person from being everything to another person, which is, my gosh, terribly, terribly scary. But the other thing is also is that, you know, this idea that if I find the one and, you know, and this person gets me, which I really think is a huge part of any successful relationship, is kind of being accepted for who we are.
Right.
And by the way, I mean our best selves, not necessarily our worst selves. But this idea that my soulmate also is perfect, that they never do anything to annoy me, they never, you know, that it's that, like we said, we sail off into the sunset, you know, with absolutely no rocky waters. And I think that that's an idea that really kind of sets people up for disillusionment. Yeah, disappointment, because, you know, there's no way, I mean, there's no way that I'm not going to do something to annoy my partner, or he's not going to do something to annoy me, and that doesn't mean that we're not meant to be in relationship together.
Exactly. Well, and also there's a, you know, a two-pronged, you know, aspect to this. And
right.
One is that if the person is genuinely your soulmate, they're actually more likely to annoy you.
Oh, dear.
Because they are the person who will hold up the most accurate mirror to you.
Mm.
And they are also the person who won't let you get away with your bullshit, if you'll pardon my French. I'm sorry.
Right.
They are the person who will say, hey, I thought you were going to start that exercise program today because you weren't feeling so physically well.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, I thought you were going to sit down and write today because that's something that makes you feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I thought you were going to go practice, you know, your music with your friends today because that's something that gives you a lot of energy. They're the person who won't let you make excuses.
Oh, I like that.
And they're the person who won't let you off the hook when you aren't being your best self. And so your soulmate is actually the most likely person to annoy you. Second piece of this puzzle is what you were talking about earlier in that stream, is that when we are in a primary relationship, a marriage, a partnership, where we are putting the pressure on our partner to be all things to us.
Oh, boy, yeah.
We are dooming ourselves to failure. You know, people who don't think their spouses should have friends or should go out with their friends or should, you know, or who want to cut them off from, you know, relationship with their family or, you know, whatever support systems they have going. That's so unhealthy. And so nuts, you know. It's, you are not meant to be all things to another person. Your life is supposed to be a tapestry of relationships. And yes, you have that primary anchor, you know, and that primary person that you, you know, can count on at the end of the day. But to say they need to be all things to you is unbelievably unfair and unhealthy pressure.
Right. And then the other side of that, which we'll talk about in a little bit, is also, are you willing to be everything to them? Which, again, is usually not what people want to do. So this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with editor and writer Kara Post Kennedy about the ever-popular concept of finding love with the one. And if you're questioning whether the person you promise to love, honor, and cherish until death is your soulmate, let me assure you that you are not alone. But just because you have doubts doesn't mean you made a mistake. Your partner may indeed be your best match. It's just that the relationship isn't all that it could be. So I invite you to send me an email and get your copy of my 3 Secrets to a Kick-Ass Marriage ebook. And by the way, this works for people who aren't married too. It's just as how to have a long-term healthy relationship. And all you have to do is put 3 Secrets in the subject line, and you can send that to Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's FOUNDATIONS, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. And now I want to get back to this conversation about a soulmate and good relationships. And Kara, you identified in your article 3 components that are critical to a good relationship. And so we talked briefly about one of them, which is putting in effort into the relationship. But what are these three and why are they important?
Well, I think that when people are in a good relationship, you know, you said there is that total acceptance of each
mm-hmm.
other.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, a critical when you marry someone or get involved with someone, and let's mm-hmm. say get involved with someone, because this is kind of the beginning of relationships, I think, in general. You at first, you know, when the hormones are in charge.
Yeah,
when the hormones are in charge, you know, you're just swooning. You know, as I say, you're just swooning, like, oh, my gosh, this person.
Right.
And
your friends are all going, what's so special? Yeah.
Well, yes, exactly. And, you know, and that's both the good news and the bad news, you know.
Correct,
because,
yeah.
Well, thank God we don't all like the same thing, because mm-hmm. otherwise we'd all be chasing the same guy or girl. You know,
right.
Like, thank God we all find, you know, different things attractive. And there are so many components to attraction. And, you know, but in the beginning of the relationship, you know, we have hormones over logic.
Yes.
So hormones, you know, make us swoon. And every single little thing about this person is so adorable and amazing and wonderful and incredible. And this is not a good time to be making long-term decisions.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is.
But
not.
Why is that? Because people do.
They do. And you're like, oh, God, no. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not a good time to be making decisions. You know, when I was a young single girl, we used to call it the three-month rule.
Uh-huh.
You know, that you had to wait 3 months for the hormonal surge to kind of wear off.
Yep. Or at least calm down.
Or at least calm down so that you could start to say, well, actually, you know, like you mm-hmm. say, he does leave his socks on the floor.
Right.
You know, like, actually, you know, that there are, so that you can see reality, you know, because
uh-huh.
we're just people, you know,
oh, yeah.
we're just people. And we are not a finished product, and we're never going to be, probably, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to be chill with that.
Yeah.
And you need to also have perspective that when you get involved with someone, and I think women tend to do this a lot more than men, if I can draw the gender line here,
mm-hmm.
Women tend to get involved with fixer-uppers.
Oh, yeah, the bad boys. The bad boys all bring him around.
Totally.
Oh, my gosh. Mm.
Yeah, women tend to get involved with men they think they can turn into their, you know. And when you
their ideal.
Yeah, when you are loving someone's potential, rather than loving who someone actually is. There is beauty in loving someone's potential. Don't get me wrong. You know, there is beauty in loving someone's potential, but the reality is that you have to live with what's real and not what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so if what's, you know, I've written in another article, you know, these fixer-uppers tend to turn into a lifetime of disappointments.
Yes.
Because you're not loving who they are. You're loving who you want them to be or who you see them as. And even if who you want them to be and who you see them as is something beautiful and extraordinary, that's not who they are today. And
well, but the thing is that may not be who they want to be.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right.
And I mean, I frequently will ask some of my, you know, some of my single female clients, it's like, do you love the person in front of you, or do you love the person that you think that they could be? And if it's not the person in front of you, then stop.
And so this is, you know, this is the, you know, the marriage, what we're looking for is a marriage of chemistry and compatibility.
Okay.
So you have this person who, you know, does it for you on, you know, that level of
right. You do still want your heart to flutter a little bit.
Absolutely. You know, that is and that is something I think that, you know, most people who are in good long term relationships will tell you. That, you know, obviously waxes and wanes, but it's there.
Right.
You know, it's there. There is still that, you know, be still my foolish heart, you know, reaction to that person. Not all the time, but, you know, maybe if they get up in the middle of the night with the kids. You know, like, there's that part of you that just will always, you know, see that, you know, that element of that person. But then you've got to have compatibility now, not in your ideal future. You know, compatibility with who and how your person is today. And, you know, that's a huge thing that I see particularly young people overlooking, like not understanding that the culture of your life and the culture of your home is critically important to having a successful marriage. You know, if, you know, one of you wants to play video games all day and the other one wants to go to the opera, that's
right.
Eventually going to wear away that affection and wear away because you have to be on the same page. You know, you have to have that compatibility. Raising kids especially. My goodness. You know,
right.
I mean, there's yin and yang, and that's a powerful element, I think, in healthy relationships. But, you know, at the end of the day, you have to agree to the kind of lifestyle that you want and to the kind of environment you want to raise your kids in and to the kind of future or not raise your kids in, you know.
Or even have kids. I mean,
that's
this
exactly.
is, right.
Exactly,
I mean,
yes.
And what and this point is really pertinent because it used to be back in the day when marriages were arranged,
right.
They would be arranged with people from our same tribe, from our same situation, and you know, so there was a better chance that things would connect.
Right.
And you know, and even now when it's wide open, one of the things, it's not that people shouldn't or can't do this, but to match people from extremes of anything, so extremes of education, extremes of socioeconomic status, extremes of, you know, if you have somebody who's terribly religious and somebody who's not, these things can be worked through, because I think of, you know, James Carville and Mary Madeline,
them too, right?
You know, and sometimes I wonder, it's like, okay, how do they make it work? But apparently they have more in common than that, but it does add additional stresses, I think, to the relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because, you know, as we started this segment, there are the three elements are that compatibility, chemistry, but then the third one is good old-fashioned elbow grease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a relationship is work. It's work. And people hate that. I actually have a new article, you know, publishing today called something like Why Bad Relationships Are Junk Food for Your Soul.
Oh, I can't wait to read that one.
and you know, and this is what I'm talking about, how we as people comfort ourselves with unhealthy choices. Oh, I'm feeling bad. I'll eat a Pop-Tart. What?
Uh-huh.
You're feeling bad. That high fructose corn syrup isn't going to help. You know, we go for that short-term high, you know, and,
right.
and that is, you know, in abusive relationships with food, in abusive relationships with drink, and in abusive relationships, period.
Right.
You know, and the idea of, you know, we were talking about the you know, the passion and the chemistry at the beginning of a relationship and how it just really overrides your common sense. And it's super fun and it's super exciting, but it's not reality. You know, it's just, it's a temporary, you know, it's a temporary high. And in order for the relationship to become entrenched and to become something really flourishing and amazing, you know, you kind of have to get past that. But so many people are addicted to that high. And so
right, and they don't understand that it wears off, that you cannot stay in that high.
What they do is they tend to get involved with people who have addictive or narcissistic personalities who will recreate this, you know, this high.
The drama.
Rejection, yes. Rejection and then, you know, win you back, you know, this game playing, these head games, these childish, and so it feels very exciting and very dramatic, and, you know, quite frankly, our media promotes this.
Yes,
you know,
it does.
When you watch movies, you know, what is romantic? Listen to songs. You know, it's funny, my son is 13 now, and, you know, sometimes I don't tend to have the radio on in the car with him because we tend to be talking.
Uh-huh.
But his dad will, you know, be more, you know, the kind of person who's got the music on, and, you know, we're older, and so mostly the oldies. And my son's commentaries on, you know, some of the music from my growing up time is just absolutely riotous. It'd be like, you know, the Police, Every Breath You Take. He's like,
right.
That's just terrifying.
Yeah, that's actually a song about stalking, but people didn't realize it at the time. I mean, it's like, okay, we don't want this person, but it sounds so romantic. I mean, this is how people get into some emotionally and physically abusive relationships. It's because I can't live without you, and nobody will love you as much as I do. And it's like,
oh my god,
back
yeah.
off, dude.
The '80s in general, you know, and this is again something I've written about. The '80s in general, the music is "Don't You Want Me?" Like, you broke up with me, and now you'll be sorry. You
right.
know, it's just, like, terrifying. But we weren't mindful. You know, we weren't mindful of these messages because we were kids, and, you know, it's just, it's in one ear and out the other. But, I mean, a lot of movies, a lot of books. I mean, you know, we won't even go into 50 Shades of Grey, but my God.
Oh, gosh, please.
A lot of this is promoting really unhealthy behaviors, really unhealthy templates as romantic.
Right. But I want to get back a little bit before we wrap up about, you know, this idea that you just because you run into a bump or because you and your partner don't agree on everything,
right.
That it doesn't mean that you aren't in a good relationship, because it is about working through these differences. It is about putting something above your own individual.
Absolutely.
Momentary want or desire, and that doesn't mean that. And I have to be careful because your wants and desires matter.
Absolutely.
but it's about perspective, and it's about balance, and it's about, you know, you can create a wonderful relationship with another human being, but it does take effort. You can't just go, okay, let's put it on autopilot, because then you end up flying into the side of a mountain.
Well, and again, I think this is where that whole concept of the soulmate can be a dangerous one,
mm-hmm.
you know, because people think that it's happily ever after. I found my perfect ideal person, and now, mm-hmm. you know, it's all smooth sailing. But, you know, it would be all smooth sailing if there weren't other people and jobs and, like, you know, and financial needs and children. And, you know, I mean, there's so many X factors. It's
mm-hmm.
not just the two of you in your pink bubble.
Right.
You know, it's the two of you dealing with job loss. It's the two of you dealing with moves. It's the two of you dealing with maybe a child's health or development.
Or your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
It's life.
Yeah.
You know, it's life. And you have to have somebody by your side who isn't going to stay in that pink bubble when you need their help.
Right. That's gonna be pushing that rock up the hill with you.
That's exactly right. And you need to have somebody that you trust implicitly, and you need to have somebody who trusts you.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, so that you can, you know, divide and conquer, so to speak, you know, that there isn't an unfair burden placed on one or the other of you, that, you know, you are working together, that you are able to communicate when you
yes.
feel like there's an unfair burden, you know, being
yes.
on you, and that that won't be met defensively or angrily.
Right.
You know.
And not just bitch and moan on Facebook about it.
People talking about their relationships on Facebook really need to give it a rest.
Either that they're all bad or that they're all good, because that's not the truth.
Yeah, that's not the truth. And, you know, and I believe, you know, quite frankly, anyone who wants to conduct their relationship in a fishbowl like that, you know, I mean, this is actually something they've proven. The more you're on Facebook bragging about your relationship, the more vulnerable it is. This is something
yes.
they've actually studied. You know, that's not a healthy relationship.
Well, it's also not reality.
Yeah, that's the tabloids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's People Magazine, you know. I mean, that is not how respectful, evolved, mature adults conduct their relationship with each other. Their relationship is sacred. And it is something that the two of them, and I'm not saying that if it's your anniversary and your husband gives you big flowers, I don't know, I wouldn't, but some people do, and that's fine. It's, you know.
It's what works for the two of you.
It's what works for the two of you and what you both agree to and what you both feel comfortable with. And
uh-huh.
it's every day, you know.
Yes.
A relationship is every day. And you need to make those choices every day, you know, to pick your partner.
Yep.
And to, you know, to confront what is going on, good, bad, and, you know, ugly. It's
right.
What, you know, that is what a relationship is. You know, you look at this person, you don't blow off, you know, your misgivings, you don't blow off, you know, you're saying, some people are saying, am I with the one? Well, this is a good question to be asking.
Mm-hmm.
That means that there's something out of kilter.
Right,
because
a lot of times, if you are with the right one, it doesn't mean that you think they're perfect. It just means you feel that safety, security, and sometimes you can't even put a word to it, but you feel that acceptance.
Absolutely.
And you feel safe. So, Kara, this has been wonderful. We could keep talking about this, and I need to have you back on to talk about this more. But for right now, where can people learn more about, you know, because you're very good. I mean, this article is, you know, it's got a historical perspective. It's got a scientific perspective. It's got, I mean, where can they read more about this?
Well, I am an executive editor at the Good Men Project. I'm a columnist there. The Good Men Project is a great resource for sex, love, and relationships articles. You know, as I say frequently in my articles, you can also Google anything that interests you. But we would love to have some people not only come to the Good Men Project and read what our writers have to say, but if you are a writer yourself and this is a subject that interests you and you feel like you have a perspective, send us your work because, you know, maybe we would be able to share your perspective with our readers. So that would be great both ways. Come read us, come write for us.
Terrific. So, you know, I know that humans are wired for simple, but real love can't be easily divided into the one and not the one. There are too many moving parts, and lasting love happens when there is more of what you want than what you dislike, and, underline and, capital letters, the willingness to put energy and effort into keeping the relationship going. So hopefully one of the things that you'll do is to keep listening to the show, and until next week, stay loving.